All right, we're doing Perek Yud Beis in Hilchos Sanhedrin of the Rambam in order to get a sense of how criminal cases, this is Dine Nefashos, the Rambam says, Ketzad Donin Dine Nefashos, how do we judge Dine Nefashos? Dine Nefashos, you know, can only be tried by a Sanhedrin. Essentially, there are three different types of courts in the Torah legal system. The simplest one is a Beis Din, and a Beis Din consists of three people. And they're empowered to try basically monetary cases, that type of thing. But anything which has to do with onshin, with punishments, such as lashes, which is Malkos, or certainly the death penalty, you cannot be tried by a simple Beis Din, can only be tried by a Sanhedrin of at least 23. 23 is the minimal number that would classify and constitute a Sanhedrin. And as we will learn, there's a difference, a qualitative difference between a Beis Din of 3 and a Sanhedrin, not just a quantitative difference. It's not simply a matter that there's more judges, because you can have that phenomenon. You can add to the Sanhedrin if necessary. You can add to the Beis Din of 3 if necessary, if you want to increase the amount of judges. So that may be a good thing, because the more Talmidei Chacham, and thinking about it, you get a better judgment, so to speak. However, if you would have, for example, 7 people in a Beis Din, sitting on the Beis Din, trying a monetary case, that would not essentially be different than 3. From a qualitative standpoint, they're both the same. They both partake of the shame of the identity of being a Beis Din. A Sanhedrin, that's the composite of the question. Sanhedrin is 23. Is it simply a greater quantity? Or is it also a qualitatively different phenomenon as well? I'll just leave that as a question, and we'll see, hopefully, when you go through the Mishnah, see if you can find anything in the Mishnah which would indicate one way or another the answer to that question. Okay. And also, as I'm sure you're aware, in order to be on the Sanhedrin, you have to have what's called smicha. And the real smicha, which would empower an individual to judge these types of cases, is no longer in existence, came to an end at a certain point in history. Whether it could be reconstituted or not is very interesting. The Rambam gives an opinion that there is a way in which it could be reconstituted. There's a historical incident revolving around that. They did try at one point to do so. But it didn't succeed. The majority of the Torah scholars were opposed to it. It didn't succeed. So we don't have the true smicha that would enable us to form a Sanhedrin, this manazeh. Therefore, even if the state of Israel were to become a religious state, to be ruled by the rules of Torah, we would not have the death penalty. Because you can't give the death penalty except with a legitimate Sanhedrin. We don't have Sanhedrin. We do have Beis Din. So today, the law of Beis Din applies. That is to say, if a person has a claim, a person has an issue, a monetary issue, a dispute with a fellow Jew, he's not allowed to go to a secular court. There are only certain circumstances in which he's permitted to go to a secular court. And that is if the other person refuses absolutely to go to Beis Din after being summoned the correct amount of times, so then, to save his money, he can go. But at first, reaction, he can't sue a person in a secular court. That's a serious avera. Tzchil Hashem. So, in terms of monetary issues, we do have Beis Din today. But in terms of capital offenses, in terms of serious punishments, we don't have Sanhedrin. So, as I said, if the state of Israel, let's say, was to be run by Torah law, you couldn't give a death penalty to a Jew, that's for sure. The question that arises, what about the case of someone like Eichmann, Adolf Eichmann, the Nazi war criminal? He was in charge of the deportations to the concentration camps. So he was captured by Israel. And he was tried. Major event in Israel, I mean, it was a major event in terms of the entire world. But, of course, he was found guilty, and he was executed. He was hung. I think he's the only person in the history of Israel that was ever executed by the state, because they pretty much don't have a death penalty, even for terrorists. So they made an exception. Why they made an exception for Eichmann, I guess because the magnitude of the crime. That's their manner of thinking. I don't necessarily agree that he's the only one. I agree that he should have been killed, but I don't agree that he's the only one. I think others should be included. But that's a different point. So the question arises, but let's say Israel was functioning according to Torah law, would we have been permitted to execute him? My answer is yes, because he wouldn't require a trial. I don't see why he required a trial, unless they needed to prove to the world. It's probably the reason why they had a trial, to prove to the world that we're a very civilized type of a state, a system, and we proceed according to the law. That's it. All right, that's the case. You're right. Even if everybody knew in advance that he was guilty, there was nothing serious about the procedure to determine whether he was innocent or guilty, but they had to go through everything in a very careful way to demonstrate that they operate by the rule of law. As far as halacha is concerned, he's chayav misa, because he's a Amalek. And the laws pertaining to a Gentile are not the same as the laws pertaining to a Jew. The Rambam makes it clear that the laws pertaining to a Gentile are very serious. He has seven Noachide laws, and he's chayav misa, actually, if he's in violation of any one of them. I mean, he doesn't mend his ways, whatever. But that's the reason why Shimon and Levi executed the entire city of Shechem. Because the Rambam learns, because they were in violation of the seven Noachide laws. Because they themselves committed gezel, kidnapping. And the rest of the city stood by and didn't try them, didn't bring them to justice. Because according to the Rambam, that's one of their obligations, is to have a system of justice and to try offenders. So they were guilty for allowing him to get away with it. So that's why, according to halacha, the Rambam is explaining that they were acting in accordance with halacha in giving them the death penalty. All right, we'll get to that story in Bereishis. I mean, so of course you can ask, if that's the case, so why did Yaakov get angry? What was the whole machlokas over there? But it's clear from the Rambam, it's also clear from the Ramban, that the argument between Yaakov and his sons about that incident, Yaakov condemned them for the incident, was not because he held that they were not acting in accordance with halacha. It was for other reasons. Anyways, as far as a Gentile is concerned, and as far as a case like Eichmann is concerned, once we know that he's Amalek, we know that he's Chayav Misa, you have a chiyuv to kill him, you have an obligation to kill him. There's no question about it, and that does not require a Sanhedrin. It's a chiyuv on every Jew to kill Amalek. That's why they had the soldiers, many Jewish from the American army, after the victory and the liberation. So they had some of these groups of soldiers that came upon some Nazis by the concentration camps, and they executed them. I've heard those kinds of stories. That's a big mitzvah. That's a big, big mitzvah. To kill Amalek is a big mitzvah. And that's no egg at all times. That's in effect today. It's a very big mitzvah. I mean, I'm assuming a person is doing it l'shem shemayim. No, it's not easy to, because the anger that you have is so great on a personal level that it sort of overshadows the l'shem shemayim of it. But it's a big mitzvah. However, as far as a Jew is concerned, this is an extremely important point. And that is to say that if a Jew commits a sin or a crime, whatever term you want to use, it's always an avera. Murder is also an avera. The fact of the matter is that he's not really going to be punished for the act itself. That is to say, so let's say we know today, it's not the reason why we can't give the death penalty to a Jew. A Jew was Machal Shabbos. If he doesn't, under certain circumstances, that carries the death penalty. Other averas carry the death penalty. Let's say murder. So let's say we know, we have everything you need, we have witnesses, there's no doubt that he did it. Still, we can't give him the death penalty. Because the death penalty does not come merely from the fact that he committed the avera. the death penalty comes from the fact that Beis Din pronounced him guilty, which gives him a hallow shame of being a Rasha. It's a very, very important point. This will all come out, and this point will be useful to you in analyzing certain issues that we're going to be taking up in the Gemara. And prior to that, if he does not have this shame Rasha, because he has not been found guilty in a duly constituted Sanhedrin, you can't punish him. It is the shame in the Gavra. That's one of the ways in which Sanhedrin, Dinei Nefashos, we're taking up the issue, how is Dinei Nefashos different from Dinei Mamonos? That's one of the ways in which it is different. In Dinei Mamonos, a person can sometimes judge for himself. If it's difficult to get a Beis Din, or the other person doesn't want to go to the Beis Din, and you know the halacha, and you know that the other person owes you money, he's holding your money, so you can go and take the money. It's your money. I'm assuming that you're operating in accordance with halacha. Now you can see the difference. If Dinei Mamonos operated in the same way as Dinei Nefashos, then what I just said wouldn't hold, wouldn't make any sense. Can anybody explain why? What do I mean by that? What is Beis Din really doing in terms of Dinei Mamonos? What's their function over there? It's really, the function is to be Mavara Hadava. They're not creating any new realities. The Beis Din, that's the question. Does Beis Din create new realities? Or does Beis Din simply investigate, and they're the ones who are entrusted to make a decision as to what the actuality, what the reality is, in fact? That's a good question that one should ask. And it's not just a abstract philosophical question, idle. It's not an idle speculation. It's very real. It has great significance. Because if indeed, if we're going to say that the function of a Beis Din, in Dinei Mamonos, is to create the legal realities, therefore, until the Beis Din would to make the pronouncement, so then you wouldn't be able to do anything. Even though I was convinced that you owed me money, but if I went and took it, you could take it back from me, you could sue me for that. What right did you have to take it? So the answer is you do have a right to take it, because Beis Din's role over here is not to create legal realities. Beis Din's role over here is to uncover the truth. And the truth of the matter is that it's my money. So what do you need Beis Din for? You need Beis Din because that's not always clear to people. There's always disputes as to what. Kind of complicated situation. The simple cases, I loaned you money and you didn't pay me back, that's simple. If you refuse to cooperate, so I may have to take you to Beis Din. Beis Din then will only order you to do that which you had to do anyways. Beis Din's playing a different kind of a role over there. In the cases where it's complex, we have counterclaim, complicated businesses, dealings, I claim percentages and so on and so forth, it can be very complicated. So Beis Din can really deliberate on the matter for long periods of time to uncover. But the fact that they're deliberating and they come to a conclusion after this complicated maze of facts and situations, transactions, again, it's not that they're creating a legal reality. They're, according to the best of their ability, they're taking everything apart and they're going to show you, they're going to find out what the actual case is. But after all said and done, that means to say that all along, had we known the same thing, had we understood that clearly, we would know that you owed him this amount of money. However, in the case of the Sanhedrin, what is Beis Din doing? Beis Din is creating a legal reality that didn't exist before. That's their role. So you see that the Sanhedrin is a different phenomenon. It's a different phenomenon. This is an extremely important point. And as we go through the Perek, you will find issues that will revolve around this. And the fact that you're aware of this will help you to understand certain phenomena. If that is the case, you can very well understand why we cannot have capital punishment today without the Sanhedrin. Because even if a person committed all the most heinous crimes, we're talking about a Jew now, he violated the whole Torah, and committed averos that carry the death penalty, and we have the goods on the person, we have all the evidence we need. So you say, what's lacking? We know that he's chayav misa. The answer is, he's not. He's not chayav misa. In terms of the system, He's not chayav nis in terms of the system until he goes through with the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin creates the shame and the gavra. That's the legal reality. And that is what obligates the Sanhedrin to carry out the punishment. Then it must be carried out. However, in the case of an Eichmann, I maintain that it's not the same. That when you're dealing with a non-Jew, and you're Amalek, for example, the fact that it's Amalek is something which is not subject necessarily to the judicial process. Not that you don't need the judicial process to create the Shem Amalek. That they do that by their behavior. And in many ways, it's obligatory to preempt in terms of Israel and the Palestinians, the terrorists. Well, let's just talk about that. The cases. Cases you read about every day, cases during the summer where they bombed the house of that Sheikh Shahada, he was the one of the leading terrorists, I think Hamas, I'm not sure. And that was controversial. It was only controversial, I believe, because others were in the building at the time. But that was a very big mitzvah, because that's Habo l'hargecha hashkeim v'hargo. Somebody's coming to kill you, get up and kill him first. By the way, that would apply even to a Jew, fellow Jew, because that's self-defense. You don't need the Sanhedrin. Someone's coming after you to kill you. You don't have to say, "Well, hold it, stop." We have to have a Sanhedrin now. You stay there. You can stay there with your gun, and I'm going to go to Sanhedrin. Then we'll deliberate. Oh, I can shoot him. Then you. No, it doesn't work that way. That's different. That's a different phenomenon. There it's a matter of. It's called the rodef. Yes, the shes. Obviously, if you want to be stubborn, you could ask me a question. What right do you have to kill him? You're going to be logical, that logical. Because, again, what gives you the right to kill him is the reality, the halachic reality, the shame rodef, that he's a rodef. And you're mechliyev, that once he has the shame rodef, that too is a halachic phenomenon. So then you're mechliyev to stop him. To save the nirdaf. Even to the point of killing the rodef. It's not that you're mechliyev to kill the rodef. I have to be clear about that. You're not mechliyev to kill the rodef. You're mechuyev to stop the rodef, because the real chiyuv is to protect the nirdaf, the one who's being chased, the victim. And that's what the Rambam says, that if you have the opportunity to shoot him in the leg, to stop him by shooting him in the leg, you're not allowed to kill him. So to frame it in a different way, it's not that the rodef is chayev misa. That would be an incorrect way. That's what I said the first time. I was just being descriptive. That would not be precise. Because from that you would come to the conclusion that you have to kill him, you shoot him in the head. No. You have to protect. You have a right, you have a chiyuv to protect the victim, the nirdaf, and that gives you the right to interfere with the rodef, but only gives you the right to do the minimal necessary. If you can trap him, if you can tie him up, then you don't have a right to injure him, the minimal necessary to protect the nirdaf. However, you have the maximum necessary. If the only way to stop the person is by killing him, you're allowed to do that. This was the subject of a machlokus in Tanakh. Anyone familiar with it? Here's another illustration of situations in which the death penalty, so if you want to use that term, would be permitted, because you'd be able to execute a person. He's a rodef, even if he's a Jew. On the assumption, however, the assumption would be that that's the only way you could have stopped him. So that even in today's world, if one Jew is chasing, coming after another Jew, to kill him. Or it's not just to kill him, it's to rape a girl. Same thing, that's a rodef. You would have, not just the victim, everybody. Your obligation would be to protect the victim, and to stop the one who's chasing the victim, obviously assuming you have the ability to do so. And if you did, then you had a gun, and the only way was to shoot the person. Let's assume we had a Jewish legal system today. So you might be brought to trial. The argument might be that, but the argument couldn't be that you had no right to interfere. You had an obligation to interfere. The only thing is that witnesses may say that you didn't have to kill him, he was down. Like you have a lot of these videos sometimes with the police. And you kept hitting him, beating him on the head until he died. Well, he was down, and then you shot him. If you did that, then you're a murderer. So... depends. That would be murder. Even though this person is a rodef and you have permission to kill that person, that permission is only if necessary. But if not necessary, so it's shfichas dam, it's murder. But today we couldn't give you, but that doesn't carry the death penalty. The Rambam says that in that situation, even though it's murder, you don't get the death penalty for doing if you kill the rodef when you didn't have to. Okay, so let's get back to the Rambams here. Kesad Dana Dina Nefashos. How do we judge Dina Nefashos? Now the next sentence is very significant. Kishe Yavou Edim LeBesdin. When Edim come to Besdin, witnesses come to Besdin. V'omrim, and they say, Ra'inu Zeh, Oploni, we saw such and such. Or Oploni, or we saw this person. She'avar Avera Plonis, who violated such and such an Avera. Whatever, the Avera would be something that's actionable, as they say, punishable by the Sanhedrin. Now what's interesting about this is, what do you notice from this?
They have to come to the...
It seems that the case, the initiation of the case, the initiation of the case, in American law, we're using that as a contrast, a case is not initiated by witnesses coming to a court. Case is initiated by the police, by the police do the investigation, then you have the prosecutor, he's an attorney for the people, so to speak. The state, he represents the state. And they charge an individual with a crime when they're convinced that they have sufficient evidence. Here, the case is initiated by the Aiden. And my question is, what's the reason for that? What you see from that is the significance, the power of what we call an aid. Aid is very, very significant in the whole system. It all revolves around an aid, a witness. The system cannot find anybody guilty, cannot try a person on the basis of circumstantial evidence. It can't really find him innocent, it would seem, on the basis of circumstantial evidence. The only thing that is acceptable, if you want to call it as evidence, just using the word loosely, is testimony. Everything revolves around testimony. So if there's no Adam, there's no case. If a person drops off 10 videos, or even if people claim, a bunch of people come to court. Well, the Rambam uses the word very carefully. Kishiyavo Adam LeBesdin. Adam. Why? Adam doesn't mean people. You can have 1,000 people that witnessed an event, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to try the person, because these people may not qualify as kosher witnesses. That's very significant. Even an aid is defined according to halachic criteria. The person has to be qualified as an aid. So first of all, it has to be a male. You have 1,000 women witnessed an event. It doesn't carry any validity because they can't function as an aid. That's the decree of the Torah. And then, of course, even men, well, let's say they were children. If he's not 13, he can't qualify as an aide. So you could have children that are 12, 11 and 12, or close to being bar mitzvah. All right, for a woman, all a woman can't be, so forget about it. A woman becomes bar mitzvah at 12, but that's of no consequence over here. So you could have women, adult women, you could have 12-year-old boys, and you can have many men witnessing it too, but they're not halachically observant. They don't keep the Torah. They're not sure of mitzvahs. They can't function as an aid. So here you have everything that the Torah would seem to require. Everybody knows that this person did the event, and it's not circumstantial evidence. I can mention also you have all the television crews that filmed it, but that you could say, well, that's meaningless because that's not testimony. A film is not testimony. Testimony requires the witness in person. He can't be testifying from someplace in California over a hookup, some type of a TV hookup, which isn't qualified. He's got to be in the court. So that's why the Rambam said, Kishayavo Edom. case does not begin. There's no case unless you have Edom. And the Rambam says in Hilchos Edus, the first halacha, Perek Rishon, halacha Aleph, Ha'ed Mitzuva Lahoyed Shebezin. One who witnesses an act and knows that he's a witness is commanded to go to Bezdin. B'chol Edus Sheyodea. Any testimony that he knows. Bein be Edus Sheyachayev B'chavero, whether it be Edus which would indict his friend, Bein be Edus Sheyizakeu B'chavero, or certainly if he'd be acquitted. If you have evidence that would acquit someone, so then you have to go to Bezdin. There's a difference between Dine Nefashis and Dine Mamanus. And that is to say that in Dine Mamanus, just because I know something monetarily, I know that you owe him money, whatever the case is, that doesn't give me an inherent chiyuv. There, if you summon me, you subpoena me, you have a case against your friend, and I have Edus, so I don't have to necessarily get a court. You may not need me. But if you summon me, that would be the equivalent of a subpoena. But you don't need an official subpoena of the court. It's not from the court. It's from the Torah. You have a chiyuv. Apparently, in American law, that's not the case. I can't personally summon you, I think. I think you'd have to go to the court, and they would issue a summons or a subpoena, whatever it may be. So the court could do that. If I have edus that somebody committed a crime, if I know I was a witness to a murder. Let's say there's no case. Let's say there was no police. There's two. We have two witnesses. First of all, if it's just one person, again, it's meaningless. Because Eidecha doesn't count for anything. You need two witnesses, at least. Actually, Shnayim or Shlosh Eidim Yachim Dela. Two or three. And then, of course, the guy asks why three. But if it was myself and Glenn, let's say, witnessed the crime, but there's no police, so we're the only two people that witnessed it, we're the only two people that know about it, but there's no police, no one's summoning us. So we are obligated to go to the Sanhedrin and testify, tell them this is what we saw. We have a chiyuv to do that. Even though we're not being summoned, we couldn't be summoned because nobody else saw it except us. And let's continue with the Rambam. When the two witnesses come to the Beis Din and they say that we've seen this person commit this action, Omrim Lahem, so then Beis Din says to them, Makirin Atem Oso, do you recognize the person? Because if you don't recognize the person, there's nothing we can do. You're going to have to identify. These are the things the Edom are going to have to do. They're going to have to, of course, they're going to have to know the action that was done, describe the action, and they're going to have to identify the accused, the one that they're accusing. Hasrisembo, that's also very important. Did you warn him? Hasra. That's why it's extremely difficult for anyone to ever get the death penalty in the Sanhedrin. The defenses that are built in to prevent it from happening, it's really weighed, the whole thing is weighed on the side of Hatzalah. V'shaftu ha'eda v'yitzilu ha'eda. That they're supposed to judge, but they're supposed to save. I mean, how can you do both? We'll try and work it out. But there are many built-in protections, which you already saw in the Mishnah. Im omrim ein anu makirin, if they say we don't recognize him, ein anu makirin also. It's interesting. Interesting. So why did they come to court in the first place? It's interesting. I don't know. I mean, maybe they didn't know. Maybe they saw an event. And do they have an inherent chiyuv to go? And only if the Beis Din asks them this question and they answer no, so they're dismissed. I'm not sure.
They did witness something.
They did witness something. It would seem to be that way. That once you witness something, so you're an aide and you have to go report it.
Yeah.
Then it's up to the Beis Din to accept you or to dismiss you. It would seem that way.
That's
right. Oh, Nistafik Lanu. Or they're in doubt. They're not sure. If they can't, they have to be absolutely sure that they can identify. Oh, Shiloh Hisrubo. Or they didn't warn him. So again, one can say, if you didn't warn him, so what are you coming to Bezin for? Well, you could answer and say that maybe they don't know the halacha. But they know enough halacha to know that they have to go to Bezin. Or you could say, we're saying that no, you have to go to Bezin, and Bezin will ask you the question. Areze Pata. This person is Pata. Interesting. Very interesting expression. Let me erase that Pata. What is that Areze Pata? Areze Pata indicates that there's no, he has no liability. Even if he did it, he has no liability. But Pata is different than something else. For example, let's say subsequent to that, two other witnesses came and said they can identify. They get there a few days later, whatever the case may be. Would he be subject to trial? Well, we will learn, we're going to be learning, that there's no such thing, so to speak, we're using loose descriptive terms, as double jeopardy in halacha, that once a person was tried for a crime in the Sanhedrin, and he was found innocent, he can't be retried. And then whatever, people, scholars realize that a mistake was made, that they made a mistake in terms of the law. They didn't realize, they had forgotten a certain point, and they had erroneously come to the conclusion that he was innocent, and now they want to bring up the trial over again, because with this new information, can't. He learned that from Sukkim. We'll learn that from Sukkim. He can be brought back. You can overturn the decision to find him innocent, if he was found guilty. But you can't turn it over once he's found innocent. Can't be tried again, so to speak. Now, what about this person? Hareza Putter. Is the same thing true over here? He came to court. The witnesses came to court, and they disqualified. I'm not going to give you, I don't want to explain it now, save it for when we get there, that you just bear in mind when we get to that point, come back to here. I would say that here he can't be tried. This is not the same thing. Okay? I'm not giving you the explanation. I'm Echad Talmud Chok, Talmud Echacham, Talmud Chokam. V'yechad Am Haaretz, whether the person is a Talmud Chacham or whether the person is a Am Haaretz, unlearned, Tzarech Hasra, requires Hasra. Shlo nitna Hasra, elo lahavchin, bein shogeg lemezid, shema shogeg haya. This is an interesting halacha, that Hasra. Literally means warning. There's a whole machlokis, by the way, if you want to take up any of these issues on your own, to analyze, and I'm not going to define everything in the Rambam over here. Many of the points will come up in the Gemara, and we'll try and define them at that point. So I don't want to start doing definitions. It's just to have in your arsenal, to have the information. But you can, you can do the Kesef Mishnah if you're interested. If you have the time, and work on the idea behind it. This is the machlokas in the Gemara, whether a hasra is only for a ma'aretz, or whether a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham knows the halacha. The assumption being, the halacha. So why does he require Hasra or not? Now the Rambam paskins that he too requires Hasra. But the explanation is a little bit interesting, because the argument that it's lahachkin to distinguish between Shogeg and Mezid would seem to be the argument that he doesn't require. The argument is the one that says that a Talmud Chacham doesn't require Hasra. That's a little bit strange. Now I'm saying that, what's the reasoning of the person who says that a Talmud Chacham doesn't require Hasra? So I'll say, if the purpose of Hasra is simply to ascertain that the person is acting willfully, knows it, so that did the person know that it was an Aveira? So now, well, if the person is a Talmud Chacham, is a big Talmud Chacham, knows that the Shabbos is now allowed to light a fire, or whatever, he knows that's cool Shabbos. So then if you maintain that it's for that purpose, so then you have two different types of people. You have an Am Haaretz. So an Am Haaretz, you don't know if he knows the halacha now. He can always argue he didn't know the halacha. So therefore you have to give warning in order to be sure that he knew what he was doing. But if that's the reason behind it, it would not be required for someone who's a Talmud Chacham. So if that's the way the machlokah should be. The one who says that a Talmud Chacham doesn't require Asura says that it's in order to distinguish. And a Talmud Chacham, we know, he knows the halacha. His students come in, they just learned that area last week, the day before. He clearly knows the halacha. And the one who says that even the Talmud Chacham requires Hasra, obviously we say it's for a different function. Whatever, it's an inherent requirement for. But the Rambam over here, this is challenging, because the Rambam paskins that Talmud Chacham requires it, and he says, by explanation, because it's only to be Malkin. That's at least at face value, seems to be a contradiction. Because if it's only to be Malkin, so then why should he require it? Okay. Go ahead. The parak comment the Sanhedrin, Daf Ches Amud Beis. Gavi plukta the Reb Meir of Rabbanan, Bemozi Shemra. One second. Arguing in the argument of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda of Rabbanan. This is the one that we're interested in. The Tanya Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yossi Bihuda says, Chaver eino tzarech hasra. That a chaver is a Talmud Chacham. That's the term for a Talmud Chacham. Does not require hasra. Lefi shalom nitna hasra, el lahachin bein shogig lemezid. Because hasra was only given to distinguish between shogig and mezid. And the Rambam doesn't pass in that way. Because the Rambam says that Chaver, Talmud Chacham, requires Hasra. U'pasak Rabbeinu k'roik Rabbanan. So the Rambam passed in like the Rabbanan. U'pirish Rashi. And Rashi explained, Elo l'hafchen, shlo yuchal lomar, sofer ha'yisi shemuta. That is to say that he shouldn't be allowed to claim that he thought it was mutter. V'yesh l'dmoa al Rabbeinu. And one can question the Rambam. Shepose k'rabbanon. He passed like Rabbanon, the Chaver Nami Tzarech Hasra. Since he passed it that way, Heich Nosan Tam, how did he use the reason? Shalom Nitna El Lahavchim being Shogun Lemezid. The Havei Tam, L'Rabbi Yesi B'Rabbi Yehuda. The Yama Chaver Ein Tzarech. B'Bnei Shekvar, Hu Yodea, Shu Wasser. That's the same question. That's the question that I asked, is that if you understand the basis of the Machlokis, which seems to be, at face value, that's that issue. Is Hasra inherently a requirement? We don't know necessarily the reason for the other side. But the issue about a Talmud Chacham is, if you say that Hasra is only necessary to remove the doubt, maybe the person doesn't know the halacha. So where there's no doubt, because you have a Talmud Chacham, so then the Talmud Chacham does not require Hasra. But if you say that that's not the case, and you always need Hasra, so then the Talmud Chacham too. So the Rambam paskins, like the Rabbanan, that a Talmud Chacham requires to do, and he sees fit to give a reason. He sees fit in this case to give a reason, and the reason he's giving is the reason of the other position. That's the question that we ask, the question that the Kesef Mishnah asks. Okay, how is Hasra given? Omrim lo, we say to him, that is the one, the masrim, the ones who are there at the time he's going to back to the action. Parosh, separate. Oh, al tase. Either expression. Don't do this. Shazu averhi. Because this is an avera. L'chayev ato alea misas bezdin. O malchus. So apparently, because again, these are all issues. It's not enough to merely warn him not to do it. You have to warn him not to do it. Also, you have to inform him that it's an avera. That's part of the Asura. And also, you have to inform him of the punishment. Im Piresh Pater. If he's separated, he's Pater. V'chein Im Shasak Ohirkin Barosho Pater. And so too, if he didn't say anything, or even if he just motioned with his head. It's amazing the extent of the protection. And that's why I say it's virtually impossible to imagine that a person would be subject to the death penalty. Because here a person can commit any crime, and even if there are people warning him, and he doesn't accept it verbally, he has to accept the warning. If he didn't say anything, and we know he's not deaf, it shouldn't be this way, logically. Because you warned him. All right, whatever reason you have to warn him. Maybe he didn't know. But once you've warned him, so what do I care whether he answered us or not? What are we saying? He's deaf? He obviously heard it. No, but the Rambam says that if he was quiet, that he didn't say anything, and he just proceeded to do the action, he's putter. Even if he nodded with his head, giving some communication that he knows, and indicating that he doesn't care, it doesn't matter. He's still putter. Afilu amar yodei ani. Even if he says I know, he's still putter. Ad sheyatir atzmo lemisa, until he, so to speak, warns himself through his own mouth. The yomar amanas kein ani yosa. I'm doing it anyway. He warns himself. It's not enough to simply say I know. He's got to make a full statement in which he's makabel the hasra. I know this, and on that condition, so to speak, I'm doing it. Then the akach yehori. Then he can be killed. That's why you see it's extremely difficult, according to this formulation. A person, it would seem, would have to be suicidal to incur the death penalty. Even though he did the action, and he could be a talmud chacham, and even though there were two people warning him, and even if he answered them, he says, I know. That's not enough. I know is not enough. What do you know? He's got to specify. I know, and I'm doing it on this basis. That's interesting. Yavor v'yaseh takef lasra b'soch k'dei diber. It's another requirement. That's why it becomes very difficult to imagine that you can ever prosecute a person. Because the hasra is not valid unless it was connected to the maisa. It has to become a part of the maisa. That might give an opening in terms of defining what the issue is, the machlokas, about the Talmud Chacham requiring hasra or not. But it has to be done immediately preceding the action, toch kedei diber, which is a few seconds, the time it takes you to say Shalom Alecha Rebbe. Like it's a matter of a second or two. If he just paused and did not commit the action within the framework of Tokhid Adiba, so then he's putter. Even with the Esra, and even with the fact that he spelled it out himself, he just paused to sharpen his knife, he's putter. Uvein shehisrabo echad mina edim. Now it doesn't matter whether one of the witnesses was the one who gave him the warning, o shehisrabo acha, bifnei edim, or somebody else warned him. The one who gives the warning does not have to be the aid. None of the requirements would apply. It could be anybody. It could be a child, it could be a woman. It has to be in the presence of the witnesses. Because the witnesses have to testify that there was Hasra. But they don't have to be the Masra. That too is a machlokas in the Gemara. The Rambam is not just bringing down points. So everything that he's bringing down is an issue in the Gemara. But he paskins that the aid does not have to be the one who gives the warning. Bifnei afilu isha, even a woman, o eved, afilu shama kol hamasra, velo ra'ohu, even if the aid only heard the warning, but didn't see the one who was given the warning. It was a crowd and somebody yelled out a warning, so the aid heard the warning, but didn't see. The afilu hisra ba'atzmo, even if the person made a statement before he did it. I know this carries a death penalty and I'm doing it in spite of that. I don't care. So therefore there was no outsider. That's an important point. Does there have to be an objective entity who would be filling the function of master? No, apparently not. This person is subject to the death penalty.